Good morning, Tony, and really nice to talk to you again.
And you. Saying the weather has been sort of, well, it's been all over the place. It's been very, very wet for quite some time, so the ground is very wet. Yep. It's just turned cold as well, so the ground getting a bit harder. And, of course, with all that wet in it, it expands. You're going to get cracks, all sorts of bits and pieces. But it does make it difficult for the gardener, doesn't it?
It does make it difficult, and planting everything. I mean, you can still plant things, of course, in pots and everything like that if you've got a bit of nice compost in there. And it's not too late to plant those bulbs. Somebody rang me the other day and said that they just found a packet of daffodils in the garage.
Mm.
Now, I won't tell you when they bought them. But they were still all right.
Probably last Christmas or something.
Yeah, probably. I think it was probably in September when they first came in. So, I mean, September, October, November, December, all but. And I said, look, they will. Don't worry about them. They will flower. As long as the bulbs are still firm, you're okay.
Hmm.
So they planted them. And, of course, tulips. We need to get tulips in now, definitely.
Mm.
Before the real cold comes. But yeah, that's absolutely fine. I've actually succumbed to buying some little dwarf iris. And when I tell you they are dwarf, they're 6-7 inches tall.
Oh, that is small, isn't it?
It's a little. They're little ones. And they are absolutely lovely. But they come out early. And, you know, they... Oh, Tony, that you walk out of the garden into the garden, and there's these little blue and yellow flowers all over the place. Oh, I could wax lyrical, really.
You are waxing lyrical.
I am, really, aren't I?
Yeah. Yeah, there are lots of bits and pieces. I mean, the ground getting harder is somewhat problematical, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
And to say this year in particular, it's not just the ground has been getting harder. It's been soaked for the last month or so with horrendous amounts of rain. So it actually does make the whole thing expand, doesn't it? So what happens when all this... When the cold weather makes the it makes it expand further and then warms up a bit and it leaves you with giant cracks, doesn't it?
Well, this is a problem, particularly where I live. I mean, I'm on almost solid clay, and I've said to you before, I really, in the summer, I could make pots out of it. It is really, really thick terracotta-y type of soil, but sorry, Tony.
It's all right.
The more humus and sort of stuff that you put on it, like your own compost, farmyard manure, anything like that, that opens it up and lets air get into a heavy clay soil. On the opposite side, of course, if you've got a sandy soil, it does the opposite. So it holds the moisture in for you.
Mm.
But I'm a great believer in just tickling over the surface of the soil. Particularly in the autumn.
And I was going to say, I was going to mention the tickling thing because you've mentioned that before. One of the things I'm looking at is some advice from one of the gardening magazines that says, dig over bare soil and pile manure on top. Let the worms and frost break up the clods of soil. Now, there's the... the environmental issue there, isn't there, really? Because you've always been, or for recent times, have been championing the fact of tickling rather than turning the soil over to reduce the emissions.
That's absolutely right. We don't need to lose a lot of carbon. On the other hand, you know, we've been digging for donkey's years.
Mm.
I do like putting a little bit of air into the soil, I must admit. But if you've got a very heavy clay soil or even a lighter soil, by just lightening the surface and just opening it up slightly, you're allowing air to get into the soil and then put your mulch on the top of that.
Yeah.
When you're mulching, not only does it sort of let the worms do the rest, which is good, but it also it covers in any spores of any diseases that are there, so that when the rain comes, they don't splash those spores back up onto the new green leaves. So all sorts of things like that, you know, happening. One of the big ones, of course, is clematis. And clematis wilt is the big problem at this, well, not this time of the year, but in the very early spring. And that's what happens with clematis wilt. All of a sudden, your clematis is growing up and it's all looking beautiful, and all of a sudden you're starting to get flowers, and overnight the plant goes black. And you think, what's happened to this? And it dies back down. Now, it doesn't usually kill the plant, which is a good thing, but it just looks awful. And of course, you don't get the flowers. So the way to do that, get over that, is to actually mulch the ground underneath the clematis, holding in the clematis spores down there. The other thing is, which is a funny little tip actually, so if you in your area you are prone to you know, clematis wilt, and apparently there is an awful lot of it in the Reigate Red Hill area, which I was talking to somebody the other day about it. And if you get a very large plastic bottle, like a 2 litre one, cut the top off, cut the bottom off, and split down the side, right? Wrap that around the stem of the clematis on the ground, you know, where it hits the ground, and, you know, just secure the pot, the plastic bit.
It's like an overcoat for the flower then, isn't it?
Yeah, well, what happens then is when the spring rains come, it splashes on that and splashes onto the plastic rather than onto the plant.
Yeah. So it is rather like an overcoat or some sort of protection. Yeah, it's a good, fantastic idea.
Yeah, and it's a cheap one.
Yeah, it is, isn't it, really? The other thing I was going to talk to you about this morning, you've mentioned greenhouses, and, of course, all good gardeners or experienced gardeners like to have a greenhouse so that you've got you've got the outside element and you've got the inside element. And this time of year, apparently is a good time to, well, it's not spring clean, it's like an autumn clean, isn't it? Clean up the greenhouse thoroughly, and the advice is to wash the floor and the glass and the staging with a mild disinfectant to kill any overwintering pests and diseases. Good idea, bad idea, or should we just leave things to go naturally?
The only snag is it's a little bit late now, because you see, for mine, I had to do the cleanup about 3 weeks ago, I suppose.
Yeah.
Because thinking that we were going to have some frost, I wanted to put all my tender stuff inside. So I had to clean it out early. I've actually got a gravel floor in my greenhouse. There's a reason for that, because I grow tomatoes in there. And on the tomatoes, usually what you get is red spider mite if you're not very careful, because the red spider mite loves dry and warm areas. And also the greenhouse gets overheated. And so all you need to do is to go in there with a can of water onto the gravel, spray the gravel all down with the watering can, and it lowers the temperature immediately by about 2 degrees. So, and also then you're putting moisture into the air that the red spider mite and other things don't like.
So your greenhouse is actually on a natural base rather than a solid concrete base.
It is.
Yeah, I mean, it acts as a soak away as well, doesn't it?
It does. The greenhouse itself sits on concrete blocks.
Yeah.
But there's no hard surface. There is a path down the middle, which I've got a membrane on, which is a semi-permeable membrane, so the water goes through but the weeds don't come up.
Yeah.
And then I put gravel on the top of that, so
sounds
I can quite easily, you know, stick my grow bags or whatever. A very small greenhouse, Tony, very small greenhouse.
Well, you got very small plants, haven't you? You told me. Horses for courses, Jean. Horses for courses. I've got to mention something here. These are some of the, without actually mentioning any names, the television adverts that come up with recommendations for various things. And I have to say, Venus flytraps came up in television adverts, didn't they?
Yes. I think sometimes Christmas adverts give a wrong impression.
You think?
to certain people, let's put it that way. I mean, some years ago, they had one which was a talking border collie. And people were going to breeders and asking, how do they make their border collie speak? Now, honestly, so anyway, going back to plants, this advert is all about a Christmas tree mainly, which is fine, and it's topical, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But a part of the advert shows a Venus flytrap.
Yeah.
Now, a Venus flytrap is a low-growing carnivorous plant that is a herbaceous perennial and therefore is not around at this time of the year. Okay,
that's so the why advertise thing. It?
I don't understand.
Sorry.
The other thing, of course, is that at the end of the advert,
they
move this Venus flytrap out into the garden, and it grows and it grows and it grows, and it's like a tree. Well, they don't do that. They don't do that at all.
Yeah.
And at one stage, and then the Venus flytrap sort of spits presents at the kids. Okay.
All right.
Not one of the most sensible adverts, I would say.
So, in other words, if you're going looking for a Venus flytrap because you've seen this advert, don't waste your time.
Don't waste your time and don't waste your money.
Yeah.
And also, we have really, really good carnivorous plant breeders in this country rather than going abroad. So there we are.
Yeah, okay. I'm guessing in somewhere in there, they're probably trying to imitate Jack and the Beanstalk, but using a Venus flytrap instead.
I think so.
Yeah, but I didn't know that the Beanstalk spat out presents either.
Yeah, the only thing also with Venus flytraps is that you give them to kids and they are fascinating, right? They open up. And then when the fly goes inside, it triggers the hairs at the back and the Venus flytrap closes. Right? So, of course, kids go and poke to make it close.
Yeah.
Poke it and make it close. And every time it gets poked to close, it uses energy of that plant and they die.
Oh, that's not good. That's not good, is it really?
So,
but that's kids. That's kids for you. Ah, fascination, I suppose. One of the things that you should get them is a bonsai tree, I think, instead. It's a slightly longer term project.
Right.
I mean, I've got to ask you the question because, I mean, we can talk about bonsais properly in January, but because I'm thinking that more than one or two people will get them as gifts.
For Christmas,
I mean, are they a good thing to give at Christmas? Because, I mean, I've thought about this many times. I know my wife has had a look at bonsai trees, and the care of them is just off the scale.
Not necessarily. It does depend on what you've got. I've got a really good friend who runs a bonsai shop in Brighton.
Oh, right.
And he will advise as to which are the best ones to have. Mm-hmm. Some you keep outside. Because, of course, if you've got something like an oak or an ash or a larch or even a wisteria, you don't bring them into the warm or into a greenhouse. You leave them outside. And so those are really the not quite so much of a sort of a maintenance problem as the others. But I would advise, honestly, doing some research about bonsai and making sure you get the right one for the right place.
I was going to ask you about this. This was the bit I was going to ask you. I mean, because there are these kits that you can get and you sort of try and grow them from seed, but they take years to do and an awful lot of expertise. Is it better, really, to get reasonably well-established bonsai as a starter?
I think so, if you're completely new to it.
Hmm.
But particularly if you've got children or grandchildren, why don't you start them off very, very young and actually dig up or even plant an acorn or a sweet chestnut or even a horse chestnut and bonsai that yourself? And there are plenty of sort of books and YouTubes how to do it.
Mm.
So I think without spending too much money, because they are expensive, then I think for kids particularly, a lot of people think, of course, that bonsai are special dwarfed things.
Yeah.
They're not.
They're not.
Because, no, they're not at all. They're ordinary plants that you, yourself, restrict their growth and restrict their root growth and their top growth. So all you're doing is pushing all that energy into a smaller area.
Well, I'm getting an education there. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to stop it there because we are going to come back to this one and have a proper conversation about bonsai because it is a massive, massive subject. And anybody that's, it'd be very interesting to know if you actually managed to get yourself a bonsai for Christmas, get in touch with us, studio@susieradio.com, and we will find out a little bit more about, A, how you're getting on, and maybe Jean can impart a little wisdom to those of us that struggle with the subject, should I say.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. I think we're pretty much there. Tickle the soil and, keep things warm and find ways of, keeping those plants that are affected by frost warm.
Make sure, though, that you do open the greenhouse door or the windows just occasionally on hot, sunny days.
Because hot, sunny days, it's December.
Well, you get hot, you'd be amazed as to how much a greenhouse heats up when the sun comes up.
Yeah. What do you call hot? So, just as an idea, because to most of us, you know, we get temperatures of 4 or 5 degrees outside and the greenhouse is going to be a little warmer. And especially if there's a heater in there as well, it's going to get quite warm. What sort of temperature would you describe as hot for December?
Well, it all depends on where your greenhouse is situated. I'm sorry to flannel this away, but it all depends on the situation. See, my garden faces south, so when the sun comes out, the greenhouse heats up tremendously, and sometimes it can get up to about 60 degrees.
Really?
That's Fahrenheit. Yeah, honestly. And so I have to open the window.
Yeah, it's around 15, 16 degrees Celsius put into another measure.
New money.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Okay, so we're learning a bit. Give your greenhouse a little bit of air, I think, is probably what you're trying to say there. We've got to call it a halt there, Jean, because...
Have we?
We've covered quite a bit of ground there, but I know we are going to come back and say to the subject of bonsais in the new year. I'm guessing you're going to be doing some care for your garden in December.
I am.
Whatever you decide to do, hope it works well for you. And thank you for talking to us this year.
That's a pleasure. It's been really my pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, and can I just be the first, or one of the first, hopefully, to wish you a very happy Christmas and a prosperous 2024. And look forward to talking to you very early in January about some, those bonsais and other things that people might have got for Christmas.
Yes, seed sowing coming up soon.
Jean Griffin, thank you for talking to us.
Bye, Tony.